Our next speaker is Rick Curtis. He's president of the Institute for Health Policy Solutions in Washington, D.C. He previously worked in the National Governors Association, and he began his career as a fiscal analyst in the Michigan State Legislature. Rick has provided nonpartisan consultation to policymakers in many states, most recently to Governor Schwarzenegger's health care reform team, previously to the Clinton White House, and also to Senate Republicans convened by Senators Dole and Chafee. Rick is no stranger to Wisconsin. He's consulted on health care issues here for over a quarter of a century. When the legislators who advise us ask us for a seminar on a health care issue, Rick is one of the first people I call, and I just wanted to publicly thank him for the time and advice he's so graciously given to the seminars over the years. His work has been funded by just a number of foundations, including Kaiser and Kellogg, Packard, Rand, Robert Wood Johnson. He's been funded by the Healthcare Financing Administration, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And I think the demand that Rick generates across the country and the number of funders who have supported his work suggests that he's really a person with good judgment. And I found one other indication of extraordinarily good judgment when I talked to him recently. He tells me that he financed his son's college degree from the University of Wisconsin right here in Madison. Very good judgment, Rick. And we appreciate the contribution to the state's economy. His talk today is Promising Elements of the Massachusetts and the California Approaches, a Health Insurance Pool, Individual Mandates, and Federal Tax Subsidies. Let's welcome Rick Curtis.
Pat Butler and I worked together many, many years ago in the mid-70s in Colorado on health policy. And Randy Boberg, I'm happy to say, is one of the very first people I had a chance to work with when I got to Washington in the late 70s. All right, we'll see if I can do as well as Pat did here. Hey, okay. I'm going to be talking about elements. I'm not going to bore you with descriptions of exactly what Massachusetts has done or what the governor proposes or what the key legislators are proposing in California. Instead, I'm going to talk to you about elements that you might find of interest. And those elements are a requirement that everyone have coverage, premium assistance or subsidies for low-income people so that they can afford coverage, a health insurance exchange which assures that people required coverage have ready access to relatively affordable coverage, and extending a benefit to all workers, even workers whose employers do not now offer coverage, to make sure that they have access to the same kinds of tax subsidies that other workers have. And this can be done under current to federal law. And the point is, these are all promising ingredients to bring the uninsured into coverage, and they are interrelated. Some balk at the notion of saying we're starting with individuals. That does not mean that, as with the senator's proposal in California goes beyond the governor's, but Governor Schwarzenegger's proposal is at 4% of payroll. Pat described that as being substantially under Maryland. Of course, it's substantially higher than Massachusetts. But without an individual mandate, you cannot reach nearly all of the uninsured. Let me give you an example. Previously enacted in California was a bill called SB2. It was an employer payer play. It pertained to employers over size 50 in the state of California. And our analysis with RAND was that would have covered about 25% of the uninsured in California, in some measure because it didn't include smaller employers, but in addition, it didn't include the self-employed, the unemployed, the part-year employed, the temporary employed, contract workers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you just cannot reach everyone unless you require people to participate. It's just not arithmetically possible. There's an important synergy between saying everybody has to come in and what you as a state can responsibly do in terms of access to health insurance, what your market rules are or what the program rules in an exchange are. If everyone has to participate, then the young immortals who oftentimes choose not to participate increasingly over time do. That means you have a broad pool of risks and allows you to guarantee access to coverage But it means that you'll need to have mechanisms like risk adjusters across carriers and or some kind of reinsurance, and Randy's going to be talking about that next. It also means, on the other hand, that you can have contribution requirements relative to income that are affordable, but that are fairer than states find they need to have in order to bring modest income people who decided not to be insured into coverage. And let me explain that a moment, because it's terribly important. Right now, many modest income people, I'll give you some data on this later, in Wisconsin and in other states, have employer coverage. They're paying for that employer coverage through direct contributions and through indirect reductions in their wages. Even those contributions they're paying are a substantial cost compared to what states find they have to charge at, let's say, 200% of poverty to get somebody to voluntarily participate in a public program. In fact, Urban Institute is the institution that's documented this and estimated this the best. What's the problem? The problem is that if a state does that and goes to 250 or 300% of poverty, makes virtually free coverage available, then the people who are paying for employer coverage and their employers are going to say, what are we, nuts? Let's increase our pay and go get virtually free coverage over there. The employer's better off, the worker's better off, and that's fine if the state can afford it. But it means the state's at risk of spending much more. This whole dynamic, of course, can be obviated by more sweeping reforms like have been proposed here in the Wisconsin Health Plan. But if you're going with an approach like Massachusetts or California, this is a dynamic you have to worry about. So with mandatory coverage for individuals, you can, as the Schwarzenegger proposal does, say that people have to pay when they get up to 250% of poverty or so, something like 6% of their income, which, as you'll see in a minute, is substantially less than people really pay for employer coverage at that level of income, but about the same as they think they pay in terms of the employee contribution. And importantly, as well, by doing this whole package of things, it makes requiring people to participate far more palatable. Those who now pay substantially more for individual coverage because they don't have access to these tax breaks are probably going to be supportive, because even if the premium isn't reduced, and in many cases it would because of economies of scale and broader risk sharing, are going to find their prices going down because they have access to this tax subsidy. Those who've been unable to find affordable coverage in the individual market before will. They'll be supportive. And as you know, in our current system, there are a number of people who desperately want to change their job situation and because of their health status just can't because they now have health insurance. The term we use about that is job lock. So those are all constituencies that probably would see the whole package as attractive, even though a standalone requirement that they participate in coverage might be something that they would be concerned about. These tax subsidies are, in fact, substantial. I'm just using an example of a $4,000 premium, and let's say it was available to them as an individual and it's going to be available to them through an exchange. And just going through what somebody at about $50,000 a year, who's a single childless person, who has a marginal tax rate of 25% under the federal code, this doesn't include your state taxes, of 25%. In addition to that, they save money on FICA, on the employee share, and the employer saves money as well, 7.65%. And if it's part of the deal, the employer is willing to pass that savings to the employer back through, as you can see in total, the savings are very considerable. Their cost goes from $4,000 to $2,400. And unlike some other tax approaches, like the infamous trade adjustment tax credit, which has been an administrative nightmare, all this happens automatically right now, because what is happening is that premium payment is sheltered from the income that is taxed and from the amount that is withheld from their paycheck right now in taxes. It affects both the income tax withholding and the FICA holding on a real-time basis. And that means that the person sees that savings in their paycheck. So that instead of $24,000 being the amount that in effect comes out of his take-home pay, it's only $2,400. So this is an important resource for states. And frankly, until Massachusetts did it, and we've been pointing to this for some years and nobody had paid attention. Okay, so those are the basics. Now we're going to fly. Obviously, you've heard Pat talk an advantage of the Massachusetts approach, which really this $295 a year is really symbolic. It generates virtually no revenues. We estimated here in Wisconsin it would generate all of about $40 million if you charge the maximum $295 for every worker of every employer who doesn't offer coverage. But there's no ERISA problem. In that case, the employers, as Pat said, are supportive of it. It reaches all of the uninsured. It's simple in the sense that what they've done in the statute, there are waiver authorities for this, but what they did in the statute for this new expansion population served through the connectors basically say, if you're eligible for employer coverage, you're not eligible for subsidized coverage here. And then they imposed, they give what is called an affordability waiver, where they say if you can show that what you'd have to pay is too much relative to your income, then you're no longer mandated to have coverage. So in that sense, it's not really coverage of everyone. And in that sense, it's not fair to people who are low income who are eligible for employer coverage. I'd also point out that despite the simple explanations of what Massachusetts does, they have a number of other existing programs, just like you do here in Wisconsin, that they didn't change, which have policies which are very different than that for low-income parents and children, their old Medicaid, SCHIP, MassHealth policies. But the problem with this, as I said, this is only be $40 million for Wisconsin. In Massachusetts, they had this huge amount of charity care funds that they could reallocate to coverage. There's no other state with that kind of proportionate money sitting around. By the way, one of the things that Randy, as a nation's expert, is this. He looked at this in Massachusetts and comes from Massachusetts. And as I mentioned, those policies risk crowd out of employer coverage because people would obviously be better off if they can go to a job that offers higher pay, doesn't offer health benefits, can get virtually free coverage through the connector. It's a win-win again for them. There are inequities again for low-income people with employer coverage. Now then, you in Massachusetts and other states, you have a similarly small, low-income, uninsured population. You have a similar percentage with employer coverage. You have somewhat more people who are low-income with employer coverage, so these crowd-out concerns get greater the more people you have who already have employer coverage who would find the subsidized coverage available if they're not eligible for employer coverage. And of course, you don't have these kinds of charity care funds sitting around. You are very similar to Massachusetts in that only 7% of your population for this three-year CPS average is uninsured and low income under 250% of poverty. Massachusetts 6.3%. Both of those well under the national norm and well under California on the left there. California, listen, if we can do it in California, you can do it. You can do it. Now then, the subsidy costs in Massachusetts are lower than they would be here because of the availability of that pool. And again, this is another way of looking at it. You have more to worry about. 54.5% of your people between 100 and 250% of poverty have employer coverage versus 46% in Massachusetts. So that dynamic is something that you need to be a little bit more concerned about. In addition to that, I would point this out. Coverage for all is a sea change, and while this crowd-out phenomenon is something that a lot of people, including us, have worried about, and you in Wisconsin have worried about with traditional expansions of Medicaid, this is a much bigger potential with this kind of reform. Why? Because you're including the childless as well as parents up to close to median income, around 300% of poverty nationally, and there's data in the back that shows for Wisconsin is median income for the non-elderly. So all workers are now, if they're not eligible for employer coverage, eligible for a subsidy, not just the parents. And employers aren't worried about categories, but if all of their workers who are low wage or low income are eligible for a subsidy, that becomes a bigger deal. Secondly, unlike Medicaid or SCHIPS expansions, for this to work, you've got to make sure everybody knows that everybody has to have coverage. It'll be broadly known by all people and all employers if it's going to work. And therefore, these disincentives and incentives to cost shift to the state, these crowd-out incentives, become a bigger deal. Now, I mentioned to you that I was going to try to give you a simple sense of this. These are example numbers. They happen to be average premiums a year or two, a couple years ago in California. But actually, in the national data sets, you're not that different from the national norm. I think your number for family coverage is 10,000. 700 rather than 10,300. But at any rate, if that's the worker share, $2,883 for family coverage or $492 for single coverage, then that translates to respectively 9% of income or 2.6% of income. But most of the time, people with employer coverage, when they work for a bigger coverage, do have access and do use tax sheltering, and that means their real cost is 7.3% and 1.9% at this level of income. The marginal tax rate for income taxes is lower at this income range. Well, virtually every economist — you're a lawyer, but you work with economists, shake your head yes, Randy — will tell you that people really pay for employer contributions, that it results as an offset. When an employer looks at a compensation package, they look at the cost of the salaries plus the cost of the benefits. There's a trade-off. The real question is, how is that trade-off made in the bigger picture? If it was literally the people paying for their own contribution, as you can see, if we take that employer share and say that, look, that's part of their income and they're really paying for it, what does that translate to? It mean they were paying, after tax, 20% of their income and 12.4% of their income, respectively. And here in Wisconsin, most people at this income range, a majority do have employer coverage. But I don't think that's how it really works. There's no evidence that that's how it works. It seems like in most cases the way it works, and this will vary from employer to employer and will vary by size of employer, but probably on average it's sort of this average percentage of wage across your entire group of workers. And across the entire market, that's about 10%. Of wages is about what employer contributions cost. If you calculate it that way, it's 13% and 8% on an after-tax basis of their income. So that's probably on average what people are paying. And you know, if you were going to do some fancy statistical analysis and say what's the standard deviation and so forth, it'd probably be in the range of 8 to 16%. But it's still a lot more than people normally consider charging for people at this income group for public coverage. We did look at and estimate, and these are publicly available, and I have 2 minutes, a range of options that involve these ingredients, going quickly through them. One was, and we estimated this for California, as I'll show you in a minute, one was basically the individual mandate with no employer coverage. And then we actually layered on top of that in the details that this would be similar to the Schwarzenegger proposal, 5% of aggregate Social Security wages. Then we looked at one that said, okay, we're going to do 5% of Social Security wages as the floor for full-time workers, but for part-time, part-year workers, and this is to get around the ERISA problem for part-time, part-year workers. I'll describe that if you want in the question and answer session. We said for part-time, part-year workers, as defined by the state, all employers would just pay 5% of wages. And that way the state can aggregate multiple part-time employer contributions or multiple part-year employer contributions towards coverage for these people. And then in the last one, and this is more similar to the Wisconsin Health Plan proposal, it's an all-consumer exchange for full-time workers. It's fully funded by a payroll tax. We then said, okay, we're going to say it's a tighter network or more integrated system like a Kaiser. So it's a 10% savings from average employer costs in California in this case. What would that take? And it would take about 10.5% of payroll to be self-funding. That has a lot of attraction to a lot of people. It's very efficient. In this case, we estimated what the reallocations would be, and 20% of employers would have their costs more than double. If employers had already offered coverage, And I think in a nutshell, that's why you're seeing nobody who's in a real position of power there propose this, even though a lot of people find it conceptually attractive, because it is market reform, and you can get better incentives for cost-effective choice by consumers with this kind of a structure, which, again, is similar to that proposed in the Wisconsin Health Plan. These just show you the costs, and obviously, just look at the net cost of the state. We did these as the denominator. Here's what California is spending for SCHIP and Medi-Cal in total. And with just a basic individual mandate, it's a 36% increase with the Payer Play Plus approach with a 5% fee, and then the fee for part-time, part-year employers, it's a 20% increase. And with the all-consumer exchange approach, high-value approach, it's only an 8.8% increase. What does the exchange choice pool have to do with the tax sheltering? Well, if people who aren't eligible for employer contribution are going to get that tax break, it has to be through the employer. The employer has to take it from their pay and make sure it goes for health insurance. And if people are going to have choice of competing plans, that means if you're going to make that workable for the employer, you have to have a way for that employer to convey the enrollment information and the premium contribution that is tax sheltered from the individual to one place. Ergo, the exchange. That's that one place. And it can play other roles as well. And what those roles are depend as much on subjective judgment as anything else. But unfortunately, a lot of times you'll find a lot of political posturing over even what you call this thing. There are arguments over what the role of these things will be. The previous administration people rightly described their objectives for what is now called the connector as being an exchange in the market, as not being a purchaser. If you've read the newspapers, that right now it's saying those prices aren't good enough health plans for this cheapest high deductible plan. They came in with $380 a month for a $2,000 deductible plan. They're acting as more of a purchaser. The thing is that people on both sides of the aisle sometimes look at caricatures of what the other approach might become and point to that and say, we're not going to go there, when in fact the real trade-offs are shades of gray in the middle, and those are the things I hope you in Wisconsin, if you go this direction, deal with. So as a bottom line, this goes through why I think, and you've heard Governor Schwarzenegger's rationale for it, and it's similar to our analysis of it. We think a provider fee, if you're covering everybody, and if you have modified community rating, you don't charge the six more, as long as the provider fee is within the amount of the current cost shift for uncompensated care for the uninsured, which goes bye-bye if everybody's covered, it's a realistic, responsible option for states as a revenue source for this. If you were to look there, is coverage by and for all doable in Wisconsin? You betcha.
We have 5 minutes of questions for Mr. Curtis. Right here in the front, Heidi. We're going to have you, we audio tape these for legislators who drive along to wait.
Under the Massachusetts model, you talk about the young, you know, what do you call them? The
young immortals.
Immortals. I didn't quite understand. Are you saying that it's automatic enrollment, mandated enrollment? Which is it? And if it's not mandated enrollment, how are you requiring that they actually enroll?
Their enforcement is through the tax code, the income tax code, and there's a substantial penalty. And even those who designed it said, we'll have to wait and see. There is an experience with that, how well that works. But that's the that's mode of enforcement.
Heidi, there's a question right here.
In an earlier example you had in terms of savings, you show by using the tax approach, that you show a reduction in FICA. My question is, and what's going to be the impact then of the Social Security Fund?
Well, it's a good question. Actually, if you go to the website for SSA, for the Social Security Administration, you can find a calculator where you enter, and this isn't how we estimate it, but it's just a way for you to double check to make sure what I'm going to say next is true. You can enter what your Social Security earnings that are taxed are. for a number of years, and it'll tell you how much you would get now for Social Security. It's a negligible impact. It's a very, very, very small impact, not nearly as great as the savings that you would get over time on health insurance.
Rick, what's Massachusetts doing to improve health care quality outcomes at the same time they're trying to move the uninsured into these plans? Because you didn't really talk about quality particularly.
Right.
And controlling costs.
Right. Randy may be more familiar with some of those elements than I am, but they are doing a number of things in HIT, as Governor Schwarzenegger proposes to do as well, a number of things to enhance the performance and quality and outcome information available on individual providers, a number of things to make that information available to consumers for use and choice, et cetera. It's a panoply of things. And I don't know if you want to say anything more specific than that, Randy.
My impression is Durb Institute did a project for Blue Cross Foundation up there before this all happened. We did a paper, my colleague Bob Berenson did that one, on all the things that could be done for quality if you went to this purchasing framework where you started to put requirements on plans who participate and such. There was very little taste for that. They wanted to take on one thing at a time. This is a lot to chew at one time. And they're trying to get going by, midsummer. So that's a lot between now.
Well, and in fact, the connector enrollment has already been underway for some months for the subsidized coverage for the employer into the connector part. It's next summer.
Yeah. Last question right now. Mm-hmm. Senator Robson.
Well, thank you. Do any of the plans address an essential element, which is cost containment? Because this is all about access and a little bit about quality, but cost containment, when insurance keeps on going up for those employers or individuals at 12%, 15%, 24%.
It sounds like the same question. I would take Andy's
same answer.
And in California, I would just urge you to take a look at the full range of things the governor is proposing. He's really emphasizing a number of things for obesity reduction and a broad range of things that go well beyond health care financing. What isn't clear, given the way the final proposal is framed, while we helped a lot up till the last month or so, when it came to the final judgments with have to do with kind of trade-offs you people are hired to do, not people like us, it appears that the percentage of the population which would be given choice of competing plans, which was part and parcel of the idea to begin with, and Tovin-esque approach, an approach similar to the Wisconsin Health Plan, is under the specifics of the governor's final proposal substantially reduced. As the administration and the legislature finally decide what to do about it, we'll see. I think it will be increased. But that was a basic tenet as well. But there's a big emphasis there on prevention, and they're very serious about it.